Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as share thoughts on a restaurant you may want to try. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. She is the owner of Heights Grocer, Mary Clarkson. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Howdy, Eric. I am happy to be here with you today.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're here. Let's dive right into the news of the week, because topic number one, drum roll, is about you, Mary Clarkson. You're opening a new location of your gourmet grocer concept in Montrose. So tell the people about Montrose Grocer.
I would love to. Let's see. I got involved with Heights Grocer almost a year ago. It was my 1 year anniversary of Heights Grocer HTX. We are a neighborhood wine shop at 14th and North Main. And it's a very small imprint there. It's about 350 square feet and curated selection of natural wines, classic wines, you name it. We definitely have a wine for everybody in that shop. And this opportunity came to me pretty recently to put another grocer in the Montrose neighborhood, which is a neighborhood very familiar to me. I used to own a restaurant next to Numbers and a wine shop in that neighborhood, L'Olivier, and then Avondale Food and Wine. And so this kind of brings me back to my home turf, my home territory. And I'm really happy to be back in Montrose.
Yeah. So I think people who have been to Heights Grocer know that it's what, like 350 square feet or some ridiculous thing.
Tiny, teeny tiny, right? Like literally the definition of a small business.
Right. So, you have crammed in all of the things that you could possibly cram into that little, to that little space. And, you know, just to clarify for people, you've leased the former Kraft Creamery space and a Scatbird's for Montrose Grocer. And it's not huge by any stretch of the imagination, but it is much bigger.
Oh my gosh.
Heights Grocer, like it's 1,000 square feet or 1,100 square feet or something, right?
Yeah, it's just over 1,000 square feet. We will be serving sandwiches and cheese and charcuterie that will set it apart from Heights Grocer, which doesn't have any food that you can have there. We'll also be serving some ice cream and soft serve with caviar, which will be fun, kind of a elevated ice cream experience. But all the things you can find at Heights Grocer will be available at Montrose Grocer, just in a larger format. So if you're looking for a gift to take to, you know, a birthday party or a housewarming gift, we'll still have the things that we have: dry goods, pasta, canned goods. You know, we have a lot of European imports, so olive oils and sardines and different salts and candles for gifts, right? Fragrances that do really well at Heights Grocer, plus beer to go and wine to go, all the things. But this will allow us to have a space where you can also have a glass of wine, which is new for us. But the focus really is on grocer and retail with this added bonus. We will have a listening component to this. We'll have a lot of records. We'll have about, I don't know if we'll have all of them in the space at one time. We're going to see as I put them in there how they look, but we're definitely going to start off with 1,000 to 2,000 records. We have 4,000 to pull from. So a little music will feel right and make, you know, Montrose Grocer stand out from Heights. But we've learned a lot of lessons from Heights Grocer, and we're trying to apply them here and add a new exciting retail space for the neighborhood.
Right. And when you say that you've learned a lot of lessons, we should say you've owned Heights Grocer for about a year now. And I would say one of the things you've learned as you've done some events and wine tastings and all that is that there is a component of your customer base that would really like to sit down and have a glass of wine with you. And that is impossible at Heights Grocer, but it will be possible at Montrose Grocer.
Yes, it's Heights Grocer is so tiny that when we do tastings, we have a wine, guest winemaker, or we open a bottle that we're excited about, and it's just a tasting pour. So our counter is so tiny there. So this allows us to be a little bit larger and tap into Montrose, which we get a lot of feedback from people that come to Heights Grocer maybe occasionally that say they love it, but they live in Montrose or they live in Upper Kirby, and traffic these days, as anyone knows, is atrocious with construction and everything else. So sometimes it's hard for them to get over there, even though we offer delivery at Heights Grocer, and we will here. I think it'll be more accessible to people that otherwise only come a few times a year.
Well, and just say a little more about the kind of the grocery and the gift side, because I think of you as primarily a wine shop, but then, you know, the last time I was in, there were these beautiful, you know, hand-blown glass vases. There was guanciale, which is weirdly difficult to find. Like even a place like Central Market doesn't always carry it. You have freshly baked breads that you're getting from a local baker. I mean, it's a pretty extensive selection.
I think of it as a place. Heights and Montrose share the following characteristic, is that they're both walkable neighborhoods in a vast city that doesn't have a lot of walkable, you know, neighborhoods inside the loop, at least in my opinion, right? So you get families that walk to Heights Grocer. You see a lot of kids that come in with their parents, and maybe their parents are picking up wine club, but there's candy for kids or ice cream for kids. There's stuff for them to get. There's gift cards, like, you know, happy birthday cards and holiday cards. And so people can curate a gift going to wherever they're going, whether it's a holiday party or a birthday party or a wedding shower. There's enough in there. We work with one of a local ceramicist, Lorita Makes is the name of her company, Lori. And so there's a lot of local things you can buy. There's candles that are made by 6 p.m. Candle. That's a local company. There's also things you can't find anywhere else in Houston. For example, Maison Dieta, this high-end fragrance and candle company. So we're trying to curate an experience and gifts that you won't find anywhere in a world where, you know, everybody seems to Amazon Prime everything. For example, we want to give you an excuse to come out and see something different.
Right. And then the only thing, you know, as much as I like going to Catbirds, the parking is always like a little bit tricky. So I think that's the only thing I'd say to people who are, just be prepared. You may have to walk, you know, half a block, a block, whatever.
You might have to walk a block or two or whatever. But again, Heights and Montrose are both walkable neighborhoods. Montrose, you can park in front or on the side. Also the side street or the rear street. And if you're ordering, if you're inside and, you know, or you call us and you can't find a spot, we'll bring it out to you. Like, the whole point of all of this is to take care of the customer that wants to frequent our establishments. So we're here to take care of you.
Well, I'm very excited for you. Oh, and we should say this is all going to happen pretty soon, right? I mean, you filed all the paperwork with TABC, and as soon as you can get a license, you're going to throw open the doors.
Yeah, sooner rather than later. I never like to be married to a timeline on an opening. I see you and I see this so much in what we do that somebody announces their opening and 18 months later, they're still not open. So let's be modest, but definitely this fall, sooner rather than later. And as soon as we get all our permits and get a few days to receive inventory and merchandise, all the display, we will do a very, very soft opening and go from there.
Right. And in an ideal world, we'll all be able to buy Christmas presents and Hanukkah presents for people we care about at Montrose Grocer, and then come back for our New Year's Eve bottles of champagne.
There you go. Maybe even some Thanksgiving ones if we're being hopeful here.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. All right.
An optimist.
All right. Let's move on to topic number two. Big news, I think, since the Manil Cafe space closed this summer, I think there's been a lot of speculation and a lot of people wondering about what is happening. So they have announced what it is. It's going to be Claire Smith, who we know from a whole bunch of restaurants. She is opening a new restaurant called Chroma in the former Manil Cafe space. Mary, you know, you're a female in the restaurant business in Houston. Claire Smith is kind of one of those pioneers. She started back in the 90s with Daily Review. She did Shade in the Heights when 19th Street was basically nothing but antique stores. And the Heights was still dry. She had Canopy on Montrose Boulevard for a long time. And then Alice Blue, which was the space on 19th Street. It was Shade evolved into Alice Blue. And then it closed. And now it is home to Agnes and Sherman. So just say something nice about Claire Smith, because she really is one of those people who was kind of in the vanguard of the modern Houston food scene.
No, she's an OG. My goodness. Alice Blue was probably one of my favorites. Canopy was really good too in Montrose. I just think this is a homecoming for her to return to Montrose. And what a great partnership for the Manil. I bet a lot of people would have wanted this space. I think it sets the right tone. Somebody hyper local. She was definitely early on food trends for Houston for a restaurant of her restaurants of her caliber. And sometimes it's good to take a break and return. And I think that's a good thing. That's not a negative thing. You need the pause and the reset to figure out what's next. And I cannot wait to see what she does.
Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot for people to like here, right? I mean, you know, the quiches from Shade and Canopy, the kind of global comfort food from Alice Blue, the, you know, the respect for local seasonal produce and sourcing, you know, I think all of that, plus whatever she's been doing these last couple of years since Alice Blue closed, you know, I think that's all to the good. And, you know, I'm definitely excited about this. I'm glad that it was someone local. I don't necessarily think that was obvious that the Manil would do that. I mean, this is an international destination. This is one of the true landmarks in our city, and they probably could have gotten anybody to take that space and work with them on something that would be a good fit for museum visitors. So I'm glad to see that it's a Houstonian, someone with experience in the neighborhood, and someone who kind of understands that, like, this restaurant needs to serve a few different constituencies, right? It needs to be a welcoming place for museum visitors. It should be approachable for the neighborhood, and it should have some sort of to-go component, because the Manil Lawn is like one of those like really picturesque outdoor spaces in Houston. And it's a nice place to like sit with friends and have a little picnic, or, you know, eat some charcuterie and drink a bottle of wine, and that's all available. And so, you know, Chroma needs to serve all of those different needs.
And I think that is something she can accomplish. And I think it's important to realize that this is a museum restaurant and it has to service locals as well as international visitors. The Manil is the most beautiful museum. It's my favorite museum I've ever been to. And I know that sounds kind of silly for somebody who travels like I do and everything else, but the fact that it's free and it's a world-class art collection along with the Lawns and the Drawing Institute and Cy Twombly and Rothko, all of these things, you have a captive audience. And I think she's going to be able to play on that very well. And I think if the patio, I've read a little bit about what the plans were. I think if there is a front-facing patio or more that looks onto the lawn, I think that would be helpful if that's possible. That would be my only thing. I thought it was weird that the patio faced the parking lot rather than the front, but people want to dine here when they're in and about and around the museum. So I'm looking forward to it very much.
And just, you know, the nice thing about being affiliated with the Manil is it is the rare Montrose restaurant with a lot of parking. So, you know, it's got that going for it.
Plenty of parking. And for somebody, like literally on Sundays, if the weather is nice and I'm in town, I like to picnic on the lawn. So I frequented this restaurant before and grabbed stuff to picnic with. And I certainly will in the future to support her and the Mill.
All right, let's move on to topic number three. Hugo Ortega and Tracy Vaught have opened Zaranda, their newest restaurant. It joins all of their other places, Hugo's Caracol, Sochi, and Urbe, and Backstreet Cafe, which is temporarily closed and being rebuilt. This is an interesting concept for Hugo and Tracy in the sense that it's inspired by California, and of course, they mean all of California, right? They mean Alto California, which is the state of California, the American part of California, but also Baja California. And so you get this like incredible, this menu that kind of runs the gamut of seafood from the Baja Peninsula, you know, meats from California ranches, wines from everywhere from Napa Valley, again, down to Baja, and that incorporates, and I think this is maybe the most interesting part for me is that, you know, Hugo has always been kind of focused on like very traditional Mexican flavors. And he's playing around with some Japanese touches, some Peruvian touches, some Spanish touches, some Chinese touches on this menu, because those are the immigrants who settled in California, right? So it's a pretty diverse menu that kind of reflects both modern Mexican and American tastes. Mary, like I snuck in for like a media preview, so I don't really want to talk about the food because neither of us have eaten there yet. But I do just want to talk a little bit about kind of your perception of this restaurant and how it kind of fits in both to Hugo and Tracy's other restaurants in the H-Town restaurant group and also into downtown as a whole.
I think it's a nice compliment. It's complementary to their other concepts. And I think finally, I feel like we're in a normalizing world post-COVID where all this convention business has returned. We're amping up for World Cup. Downtown feels really good right now. There's been a bunch of things that have opened or are about to open. And this couple, they're best in class. They know what they're doing. I'm excited to try it. And I kind of like that they opened, right? That there wasn't a lot of lead up to it. I know there's risk to that, but this is Hugo and Tracy, and they're some of the best well-known operators in the city. And so they're going to do really well down here. And I want to see what they've done with the space.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting space in the sense that it's kind of long and narrow and very tall, right? It's a two-story space. There's a couple of dining rooms that you can access either by stairs or by elevator. And it's just, you know, so it's an unusual shape in that sense. But the location obviously is excellent. It's in this Norton Fulbright Tower that's literally across the street from Discovery Green. And of course it has the big law firm as one of the office tenants. So, you know, they'll be open for lunch, of course. They'll do a brisk lunch business and catering for the law firm, I'm sure. And then, you know, over the weekends and at night, you know, this could be your spot before, you know, a Rockets game or an Astros game. It could be, you know, a possibility before a concert at Toyota Center or House of Blues. It could be, you know, it could be any of those things. You know, I mean, just even looking at like last weekend, you know, there's all kinds of festivals going on. There's protests going on. There's, you know, that's downtown, right? It sort of rises and falls on the back of whatever's happening down there. And, you know, the George R. Brown Convention Center is slated for like a 700,000 square foot expansion, which means more conventions, bigger conventions will be coming to Houston in the years to come. And so they'll be right in the mix for all of that. And you know, again, not really speaking to whether the quality of the food, but you know, they do have that reputation and it is wide ranging. I mean, you know, we know that any of Hugo's restaurants, there's going to be compelling seafood options. There's going to be good vegetarian options. There's going to be a steak or two for the carnivores and they're going to do all of it well. And so I'm excited about this. You know, you mentioned they just kind of opened without really telling anybody what they were up to. You know me, I like a slightly longer burn. I like to kind of get the anticipation going. I like to be able to sort of look at a place like 6 months in the future and start imagining what I'm going to eat there. But, you know, they're old school and they don't talk about things until it's ready. And then they go and that's it. So, you know, we'll be me and at least one co-host, I'm sure we'll be dining there very soon and we'll have thoughts on it in the next coming weeks. But, you know, whenever a James Beard Award winner opens a new restaurant, we have to talk about it. So
that's big news and they're making moves silently and stealthily. And I like it.
let me just ask you one thing, though, because Hugo was notably absent from the first edition of the Michelin Guide. We'll get the new edition of the Michelin Guide next week. But do you feel at all like maybe, like, if we look at some of these places opened by people who worked for Hugo and his proteges, right? Casa Emma, Belly of the Beast, Maximo, even Totemo. Do you worry that, like, the scene has passed him by at all or not?
I hope it hasn't. I mean, I think there's really something to be said about mentoring people that work with you and you set them up for success that they can go open their own place or they can take whatever their next step is. That's what a good operator, that's what a good business owner would want for anyone. So anyone that's worked with him that has found their own path to success is a reflection of their time working with him. But I, at the same time, I'm an old soul. You know this. Like, I like, sounds, you're going to laugh because of my affection for some older places, but old guard places have their place in time, and it's important. Like, all the things that come after that can't come without the predecessors to that. So seeing Claire return to the Manil, Hugo expand his empire like he has and grow, it's an evolution that I'm here for, and I hope that that's recognized by Michelin, because the new hot isn't the new hot without the people that laid the groundwork for that. So
Brian Caswell has the hottest restaurant in Memorial right now. You know, there's this podcast I listen to called The Press Box, and it's a media podcast. They always talk about, one of those tropes is the old guys still got it, and I feel like maybe 2025 is the year that the old guys are reasserting themselves, right? Brian's got a new restaurant, Hugo's got a new restaurant, Claire Smith's new restaurant. It's a good year to be a restaurant veteran.
I love it. Like, I'm here for it. I'm a Houstonian. I want to see a rebirth. You know, I want to see people evolve, not be stagnant. Change is good. People are too afraid most of the time to mix it up and do something different. If you had told me a year ago, or a little over a year ago, that I'd be doing Heights Grocer and Montrose Grocer, I would have just started laughing at you. So I'm here for it.
Yeah. I mean, you've been in the business since 2012. Maybe you're an old guy that's still got it too.
Hey, calm down. I'm younger than you, sir.
All right. I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Mary, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Late August. This is Chef Chris Williams' restaurant in Midtown in the Ion Mixed Use Development. This is a restaurant that has done fairly well, at least in terms of its media attention. It was given a Michelin recommended status in the guide that came out last year. Esquire named it to their best new restaurants list. And it's kind of an unusual place. It's got a menu that, as far as I know, is unique in Houston in the sense that it takes kind of African and African-American culinary ideas and blends them with Mexican influences. And I think Chris realized a couple of months ago that something needed to change, right? That they're, especially at dinner, their a la carte menu that was kind of designed to be a neighborhood spot wasn't really true to how people were using it. They've been seeing it as more of a destination. And so they pivoted, and he worked with the chef there to turn it into a tasty menu restaurant. And now it's, you know, a 6, 7, 8 course progression for $95. There are wine pairings. And, you know, we've had some pretty special meals together this year. And I'll talk about that in a little bit more depth in a minute, but I'm going to say this is one of the best meals we've had together this year.
I agree. I was delightfully surprised by how good our tasting menu was. You and I eat together. We dine together often. Sometimes they're tasting menus, but I wouldn't say that's a regular thing that we do, but it does happen with, you know, some frequency over the course of a year. And this might be my favorite tasting menu we've had this year. Check me if I'm wrong or you think otherwise, but this is way up there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've only had a few tasting menus this year. I mean, I haven't been to Totemo this year, for example. I've been to March. I've been to Le Jardinet. I've been to a couple other places, but this is right up there for me. And I think what really stands out about what's going on at Late August is kind of how polished it is and just how flavorful everything was from start to finish. I mean, even, you know, the first course is simple, you know, vegetables from the garden, you know, chopped up in like a little broth, a little sauce, you know, had acidity, had crunch, had salt, had all the things that you want in a vegetable dish. And then you move on to like the tuna, and it's meaty, and it's again, it's got like a kind of spicy salsa that ties it all together, and the rice is really nicely cooked, and it's like, okay, like you have my attention.
I thought there was a really nice progression. I thought that the courses, none of them were heavy handed. It started off light and progressed in a natural order, and the plating was wonderful. The chefs were great. I was really impressed with the quality of the food. I liked the wine pairing that they did. You and I both really enjoyed our cocktails at the beginning of the meal. There were no misses here, and you and I are very seasoned at what we do and what we see when we go out. And more often than not, you know, we'll have a great meal, but maybe there's something that's slightly amiss or whatnot. They really hit it out of the park, and I don't say that often or lightly. So well done. Like, I loved our experience there. We had a good night. We laughed a bunch, which was really nice, and lively environment. They were pretty full the entire evening.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a busy night for Late August. They had, you know, they had people in who had been, you know, at some sort of conference at the Ion earlier that day. They were catering a party at the craft beer bar next door. They were busy. I saw a bunch of other, you know, couples and on, you know, dates or dinners or whatever. They were definitely busy, and it's a lot to keep track of. And yet, you know, every single course, right, was, you know, if it was supposed to be hot, it was hot. If it was supposed to be, you know, like we had my favorite dish was that fried squash blossom taco with the salsa and the vegetables and a really good nixtamalized blue corn tortilla. And, you know, just the way it was plated, it was so elegant. Like it took me a second to recognize that, oh, that blue thing on the bottom is a tortilla and you're supposed to just pick this up and eat it. Like they didn't give us silverware, and I was confused for a second because it looked so elegant on the plate that it didn't immediately register as a taco to me. But of course, you know, you pick it up and you roll it up and you eat it, and you get that crunch of the frying and the creaminess of the cheese and the heat from the salsa and then that kind of lingering, you know, corn sweetness. And it's just an incredible bite of food. And of course, you know, you and I had been to a wine dinner the night before where it was clear that like there were a lot of good ideas, but the execution hadn't really come together because they kind of put it together at the last minute. And this was the opposite of that. This was, you know, a restaurant that's very confident in what it's doing and has been doing this for a while and is executing at a very high and very satisfying level.
Late August was a restaurant that I very much enjoyed our meal at. It's a place that I would return to, and I kind of like this tasting menu format. I think it was approachable in terms of price and value, and you got a lot of bang for your buck. So excited to see what their next iteration is. I know they were getting ready to do a fall menu and transition, so I will be back for that one for sure.
Right, and I think $95 for this menu, I think that's kind of a sweet spot for a tasty menu. I mean, I love what Maximo is doing. with the five-course, $45 tasty menu. I think that's so brilliant. But, you know, anytime that you're in that, you know, 10 bucks a course would be great. That's kind of the old school, you know, 2012 version of what a tasty menu was supposed to cost. So I'll take the $15 a course version of the tasty menu because I still feel like it delivers a pretty good value, especially relative to some of the other places around town. And, you know, I'm with you. I mean, I'm very curious to see, you know, what Chris Williams and the chef Sergio Hidalgo do to evolve this menu because, as you said, the seasonal change is coming. It's clear that they're really onto something with this. You know, the only thing, right, like I think the wine list or the wine pairings were very well considered. I'd like to just see like a little bit more polish in the presentation of the wine list, right? Like that's that kind of fine dining thing where there's just like a little bit more confidence in the delivery. And also at some point in the meal, you don't have to give me a menu at the beginning, but you have to leave me with something at the end. You have to give me a piece of paper that says what we ate because I'm still like, you know, I feel awkward taking notes in the middle of the meal to try to type down everything someone's saying about the components of a dish. And so, you know, I would like some sort of printed material that, you know, I don't need like the whole entremet. I don't need the whole tasty menu, takeaway, baked good or whatever, as much as I love those, especially for 95 bucks. But you do have to give me a piece of paper at the end.
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially with the tasty menu. People also like to memorialize what they had and remember, right? Especially if they're going to post photos about it or share it with people. They want to be able to describe accurately what they had. And I agree with the wine service. I think it could be a little more polished, but I liked the pairings that were selected. And my only critique about the space is maybe dim the lights a little bit. It felt, maybe it was just where we were sitting, but it felt kind of bright overhead. And, you know, give that sexy mood lighting, bring it down a notch. It's nighttime. It's not lunch. You're already in a really big building, so it would make it feel more intimate.
Yeah, the lighting made for pretty pictures, but probably not the best restaurant atmosphere.
I agree.
But, you know, as we always say, would you go back?
I would. I absolutely would, and I will.
Yes, I will go back. Once I see that there's a menu change, I will go back, and I will pay the full freight, and I will do so gladly.
Same.
All right, Mary, I'm going to say that does it for our restaurant of the week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Peter Skonsko and Manuel Guzman Lopez from Docs Houston.